You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Nataki Garrett was named Artistic Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland this month. An Oakland native, she's the first person of color to hold that position at OSF, one of the largest nonprofit theaters in the nation with a budget of more than $40 million. We're going to talk to her about her creative vision for OSF and How to Catch Creation, the play she's directing for the festival this season. Welcome, Nataki Garrett.
Thank you very much for having me.
Delighted to have you. And we're also joined here in studio by Eric Ting, Artistic Director of Cal Shakes in Orinda. He's also directing a play in Ashland called Between Two Knees, which runs through October 27th. Good to have you back with us.
Always good to be here. Thanks, Michael.
Well, welcome to both of you. Delighted to have you both. And let me begin, Nataki, with you, because this is historic, really. I mean, you're being named an African-American woman, single mother, grew up in Oakland. But the fact that you're the sixth director of the Oakland, let's get your words here straight, Krasny, of the Shakespeare Festival and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Oakland. You know, I'm thinking about strange thing. You know, the writer who actually wrote about Omelas, because that was Salem, Oregon, backward. Anyway, strange little esoteric thought that popped into my head. And those things happen to me, and then I get off my game a little. But let me get back to this. I mean, you've been talking about a role, a preeminent role for you as a ladder for others who, women of color, for example, because so many of the local theaters, even the bigger local theaters, do not have women of color.
That's true. Well, so many of the theaters across the United States do not have women of color as leaders. It's a part of this new, I guess, paradigm shift that we're in the middle of in the American theater, where we're looking at opportunities for women. We're looking at opportunities for women of color. Many of us have been in the field for 20 plus years. We've been working very hard, moving towards our leadership positions, following, you know, some of the most prominent leaders of color of our time forward. And so, as everybody else does, we're just sort of following in the footsteps.
And you are looking for lots to be on your shoulders. And congratulations again. I mean,
I think it's
terrific. And this is a huge operation. You got about 400,000 who go, well, yearly, and a $44 million budget. And the future looks bright. But you get into this immediate question. I want to hear what Eric has to say about this as well. Of you got all the subscribers, and they want lots of Shakespeare, and they want lots of more traditional work. And you've been working with, well, shall we say, more innovative playwrights of color as well.
You know, it's funny, all the conversations that I've had with our stewarding audience, with our audience who come year over year over year, there's a lot of support for the new work, for the development of new work. A lot of our primary donors who are, you know, based here in the Bay Area are really there for the new work. And that's what's really put OSF on the map in the last 10 years is the focus on new work, Indecent by Paula Vogel, Sweat by Lynn Nottage. These are plays that all the way by Robert Schenken. These are plays that have garnered all kinds of support and all kinds of awards across the United States, including all the ways opportunity to go go to New York. So
that right. Includes Lauren Yee's The Great Leap.
The Great Leap, yeah. And
Jose Cruz Gonzalez's American Mariachi.
Well, those two actually I did at the Denver Center when I was there,
yeah.
A couple of years ago. Eric Ting directed The Great Leap for us there while I was there. But these are new plays. I mean, you know, if you think about it, at some point, Shakespeare's plays were new, too. At some point, he was also adapting ideas and plays and stories for performance. And so if you centralize the work and the revolutionary spirit of Shakespeare at the center and the core of the organization, then what you're doing is continuing in that kind of mission.
And as I like to tell people from time to time, people don't appreciate this. And let me go to you on this, Eric, that Shakespeare really played for the masses. I mean, he's sort of associated with elitism now and, you know,
yeah.
Maybe kind of sophisticated snobbery or whatever you want to term it as or characterize it as. But it was really for the what we could call the proletariat.
Sure. I mean, I think that it's that very truth about the way Shakespeare's work spoke to its audiences, his contemporary audiences, that drives a lot of us who run Shakespeare theaters to sort of imagine a theater for all people. And in that sense, new works in particular become incredibly vital. What we find at Cal Shakes is with new plays, it actually brings audiences that wouldn't otherwise come to a Shakespeare theater to our theater. And it's starting to really kind of roll over into our Shakespeare audiences as well. That shared exposure, that sort of like this idea that a theater that purports to be the home of a playwright who lived four centuries ago can also be the home for living writers who are writing about who we are today.
And must worked, be the home.
I'm sorry?
And must be the home.
And must be the home, yes. Mm-hmm. And you two have worked together, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a couple of occasions to work together.
What Nataki produced, Great Leap, that I directed the world premiere of last season, and at the same time, Nataki came and directed Brandon Jacobs Jenkins' Everybody for us at Cal Shakes.
And what about Between Two Knees?
Oh, Between Two Knees is it's a world premiere. It's one of OSF's American Revolution's commissions. It's written by this extraordinary company of Native American sketch comics. They have a group called the 1491s, and they're five men that come from all different parts of the country.
Yeah, but they are Native Americans.
They are Native Americans. Yeah, mm-hmm. All of them. They have tribal membership in particular, which is, I think, a specific quality. And they have been working together for a number of years, kind of developing sort of short YouTube videos and a live performance. And this is actually their first play. It was sort of a huge, I think it was a huge break for them when OSF decided they wanted to commission them to write this extraordinary kind of epic kind
commission
of
and develop
play.
Both. And mm-hmm. OSF has been an inspiration for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. I sat here across from you the first time I came out here, here in the Bay Area, I'm pretty sure I mentioned OSF as a sort of like a,
we'll go back and listen to the archives.
Well, but it's sort of the beacon that organization has presented for those of us that work in the theater, that are committed to a theater that really reflects who we are today and who we want to be, is something that the folks up in Ashland have had their thumb on the pulse of for a very long time.
Well, let's talk with Nataki about her vision for the folks up in Ashland. I mean, I've gone up there and seen some wonderful productions, but the fact of the matter is that your subscribers are the people who are going to be going up there. You have to think about the next generation. So how are you thinking about the next generation?
Well, I think if you build it, they will come. I believe that it's the work on the stage. It's also working with our audiences to help them evolve, to create space for the audience that's coming. I believe in some part my appointment will be an invitation for people who don't normally come up to OSF, just because I'm a daughter of Oakland, and I will be inviting people who have never made the pilgrimage up to Ashland. I will be inviting them just by virtue of my existence up there to come on up and see the work and be a part of the spirit of that community up there.
You and Kamala Harris, daughters of Oakland.
Yes,
in fact.
That's definitely.
What she said, words to that effect, when she made her appearance here and said, declared her candidacy. But, I mean, what kind of plays are we talking about? We're going to mix it up more in terms of Shakespeare?
Well, I think Bill has done a very good job. Bill Rausch is the outgoing artistic director, and he's done a very good job of mixing it up. So I'll be continuing in his mix-up, if you will. Next year is our Jubilee year. It's a year where the focus of the work will be on women, women playwrights, playwrights of color, playwrights who are non-binary, playwrights who are represented by different abilities. It will be the year where we celebrate people who exist outside of the status quo. And so while we will have some plays by Shakespeare, we will also have plays that are adaptations of Shakespeare. We will have plays that recognize, again, the spirit of Shakespeare and some new plays as well.
You had about five plays. Am I right about this? That were actually canceled because of the fires last year.
Yes, for 26 days, there were 26 performances canceled in the Elizabethan Theater, which is a big span of time.
It's a huge span of time.
You've
got to prepare for that too. Now.
And actually, they've already set themselves up for success for these next couple of years. So they have an alliance with a local theater where they will be selling the capacity of that theater. For both the Elizabethan and that theater, so that in the event that we have to move, we already have a space to go to. I think in the past it's sort of caught the organization by surprise, and that makes sense. It's normal because if you've never had a fire season, I lived in LA for 17 years, I'm used to it. But if you've never had a fire season, you're not fully prepared for what it means. And so that what that means is that they're also selling for the very first time matinee performances for this other venue. So in order to continue to fill capacity and to give our patrons an opportunity to see as many shows as possible.
And didn't Nataki direct something for Cal Shakes? Or?
I did. I directed Everybody by Brandon Jacobs Jenkins for Cal Shakes.
And how is Cal Shakes changing, altering its vision for the future?
Oh, I think, you know, we have continued to be in pursuit of a vision for the theater that is as much a vision of for our community as anything else, that the art that we're producing is really more in service of a vision for a pluralistic society, for a space where sort of all of our points of view can come together and can really commingle and catalyze and collide with each other. It's again, as I said, work that is very much a reflection of the leadership of OSF. And Nataki's appointment has so many of us so completely and utterly delighted and thrilled for not just the change, because I think, you know, we hear a lot about the changing face of the American theater, and I definitely like to think of it more as the expanding face of the American theater.
Well, I was thinking the other day about Harold Bloom, an interview I did many years ago with a great Shakespeare scholar and literary critic, sort of the high priest of the American and world global literary canon, and he was talking about how things have been moving so rapidly. I have to go back and listen in the archives too, but moving rapidly in ways that he felt, and he was very dramatic about this. He said, when they started talking to me about the lesbian relationship between Juliet, Romeo and Juliet, and the nurse, I thought, that's it. You know, we have to draw the line somewhere. But, you know, it's an interesting question to deal with, because now you're trying to be pluralistic and reach out to all groups and so forth and fulfill that as a mission and so forth. But sometimes the lines get a bit blurry, don't they?
Well, I think that that's what Shakespeare was doing. I mean, who's to say that that wasn't a true thing? We don't know. We don't know. We don't know about Shakespeare's identity and sexual
probably
identity.
Do know. Bloom said he was gay.
Right.
There's no doubt that he was bisexual.
And also he could have been bisexual. Yeah. And also there's, you know, he also could have been non-binary. And because we didn't have those phrases at the time, does it mean that he didn't exist in a dynamic way? And so I think part of the point is to look at theater, including Shakespeare, as an opportunity to give people a chance to witness what it means to allow people to live their most dynamic life and to live in their truth, no matter what it is. And so the work of the stage has to be about that. The work of our audience has to be about that. The work of the artist that we employ has to be about that, because that is the work of our existence. That's how we live. We live next to people who live in all kinds of ways that are different from our own. And we have to make sure that the theater reflects that.
Well, let me get our listeners involved in this. In fact, I invite you now to join this conversation if you have questions about, well, the Oakland Shakespeare Festival, or about
Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
She's from Oakland.
I'm from Oakland.
Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And that whole strange thing that I got off here was really about Ursula Le Guin. I was thinking about Salem, Oregon, and Oregon keeps coming to mind in so many different ways here, because the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, by the way, is the third biggest theater within the Bay Area. If you just to take the Bay Area and you put ACT and you put the Berkeley Rep, comes third. I mean, in terms of its subscriber, in terms of the number of people who show up to the plays there,
that's
and so
true.
Forth, it's big. And
we're
very
envious at Cal Shakes.
You have reason to be envy. And there, let's talk about envy. We'll talk about Othello. No, let's talk about theater. And we welcome your involvement in the program. And you can join us now. Let me give you the toll free number. It's 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your calls and questions about OSF or Cal Shakes, or just about the way the theater is going. It's moving ahead and it's becoming certainly more pluralistic, to use that word again. What are your thoughts and what would you like to know? You can join us now again toll free, 866-733-6786, or join us by emailing us forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. And right away, here's Pat, who asks, will OSF be bringing back any of the plays of August Wilson?
I'm actually not sure. I'm committed to producing the plays that speak to the audience that's coming. And so if I have an inkling that producing an August Wilson play will speak to the audience that's coming, then I certainly would go ahead and produce one. I got my start actually with August Wilson's work when I was in undergraduate school. So I have a long relationship with August Wilson.
What was that start?
That was at Virginia Union University.
Well, actually, you have an academic background, which is also somewhat unusual for people who run theaters.
I actually don't know, because I know that Bill Rausch has an academic background. I know that Eric Ting has an academic background. But I went to Virginia Union University, and then for undergrad, and then for grad, I went to CalArts.
Did you direct a Wilson play as an undergrad? Or?
I did, yes.
What was the play?
Fences.
Oh.
Okay. And then I also directed Fences as a grad.
Well, Fences still has, it's a kind of play that brings in a large audience, I think. I mean, not only because it was a movie, but even before it was a movie, it still was a big draw. And we're drawing a lot of calls here, so let's go to as many of you as we can. We begin, Ami, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yes, we're subscribers to the OSF for many years. And I'm just wondering, I may have missed this in an earlier comment, our new director's plan for the crowds that we accompany when we go there seem to be fairly homogenous in their composition, whereas the actor ensembles show a great diversity in ethnicity and backgrounds, et cetera. What plans are there to, ensure the crowd from this point going forward become more diverse in their composition? You know what I mean?
I think that's a fair comment, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah. I believe that one of the things that we have to do across the American theater, because this is a conversation that I'm having with my colleagues in all corners of the United States, is we have to begin to utilize new methodologies to invite audiences into our spaces. Part of that is training our stewarding audience to be receptive of what it means to be in the audience with people who may not be like you, to share your elbow space with somebody who you may not be used to sharing your elbow space. Part of that is making sure that our marketing and our promotion is towards people who may not know how to find the door, who've never actually made the pilgrimage up to Oregon Shakespeare Festival. I'm not sure when this shifted, but at some point I remember theater being a kind of all-inclusive space where everybody felt like they could be a part of it. And somewhere along the way, that idea has really shifted in the way we think about theater. And I think we have to do a lot of work to really change how we invite people into our spaces. I was having a conversation with a patron recently who was talking about what it means to, this was an older person, and they were talking about what it means to share the space with younger people, and if they're going to be on their cell phones, and if the screen is going to bother them, and if there's going to be some sort of issue. And I remember thinking as they were talking, giving them space to express their fear, which is what they were expressing. But I remember thinking, it has to start with you, actually. You actually have to be somebody who says, how you enter the space is how I receive you. I don't invite somebody over to my house and then provide them with a list of rules for how they have to enter my space. I also do not decide that there's a common way of entering a space. I actually look for the intersection between the way you enter and the way I enter. And I look for a way to learn the way you might enter a space so that I might make room for that as I enter a space. And maybe you'll make room for me. I think we have to give ourselves the opportunity to grow with our audience, to open up our arms, both within the audience and also within our marketing.
There is, if I may say so, though, and let me go to you on this, Eric, and get your thoughts on it, a big question that looms over this. How do you draw younger people in when they're not necessarily used to or in any way, for that matter, inspired by theater to begin with, but particularly things like Shakespeare? I mean, I've asked this question to museum heads. I've asked it to Michael Tilson Thomas, and it's one of the major challenges, really, when you're talking about vision for the future.
I mean, I think we, as a people, are drawn to things that feel urgent and relevant to us. And that's really the challenge facing all of us that are curating programming for these theaters, is how to make these stories and these plays relevant to those audiences that you're describing. You mentioned earlier we were talking about sort of how text is interpreted through time, right? The Bloom quote that you were mentioning earlier. And that's an interesting thing, right? So all great texts, from the Constitution through Shakespeare's canon, what makes them timeless is the fact that they are elastic and that they open themselves up to interpretation. And so part of our work in who we hire to interpret these texts, the directors, the actors, who presents these stories, who tells these stories, is that we ask them to be the folks that can help connect these old stories to young audiences.
Well, I remember once seeing Nataki Measure for Measure up at the Oakland Shakespeare Festival, and there was a lot of
Oregon.
Why do I keep saying Oakland? Because you're
happens
from Oakland,
to the best
right?
Of us. No, I
keep thinking about this production of Measure for Measure because it was a real attempt to. Everybody knows Oregon Shakespeare. Maybe that's the fact. A homewoman here in the studio, so I keep coming back to that.
Yes.
Sort of tripping over that. I'm just wondering though. When I think about that production, a lot of it was playing for laughs. A lot of it was playing up the sexuality and so forth. And, you can maybe get a younger audience there schooled on a lot of television and things of that sort. How much do you really have to push toward that sort of, I mean, the marketing is part of it too, but that's a big part of it.
I think you can, I mean, I didn't get to see that production, and that's up to the interpretation of those artists who put that one together, who produced that one. I wasn't a part of that, but I can speak to this idea that we do have a generation of people who don't have the same kind of connection to Shakespeare. You know, I learned Shakespeare in 7th and 8th grade. We had to read entire plays. We had to deliver soliloquies from those plays. We had to write papers on those plays. We had to have in-class discussions about those plays. We had to go to Berkeley Rep and see those plays. So I'm a part of a generation of people who had to be connected to Shakespeare. When my cousin graduated from high school, she had never read a full play. She went to a private high school, too, here in the Bay Area, and she'd never read a full play. She'd read a couple of speeches, she called them, and a couple of poems. Maybe.
What you experienced is very unusual.
Yes, exactly. Well, and I went to Berkeley High School. I graduated in the 80s, and so I think I'm a part of a different generation of experience. I think we have to reintroduce, particularly millennials and the generation that follows them, to the work of that, of Shakespeare and the work of that language. And we can do it in all kinds of ways. Now, if they want to go see, if they want to hear or see a Shakespeare, they're probably going to download it on their YouTube, and they're going to watch a British actor do it. So why don't we have that market? Why aren't we in the middle of being the delivery system, the primary delivery system for a generation of people who are curious about Shakespeare?
Well, since you mentioned language, I'm looking at a comment here from a listener named Nigel, who says, another year, another opportunity to abandon medieval English. I think he means Shakespearean or Elizabethan English. He says, with its antiquated and often puzzling vocabulary, but does the theater community have the courage to abandon it? Do they dare?
I'm not sure what that means. What do you think it means, Eric? I think they dare. There are all kinds of interpretations and translations.
Well, you go see an opera now, you've got subtitles and you know all that sort of thing. But there are people who are admittedly probably put off by Elizabethan language because they don't understand it.
You know, I went to see a Peer Gynt. This is not Elizabethan language, but I went to see a German Peer Gynt when I was at the festival, the arts festival in Scotland, in Edinburgh. I was taken on such a visceral journey that I stopped reading the super titles because they were distracting. So I think if you bring with you, if you're on the audience side, a sense of adventure towards that language, and if you bring with you on the footlight side, a sense of kind of deeper intrinsic internal understanding of the impact of those words, what you find is the intersection is cataclysmic. There are some things you can't not understand because the body, you know, the body embodies the ideas and the impact. And so part of the point of going to see theater and going to watch story in a dark room is to look for ways to witness, to look for ways to reflect and to ignite your opportunities for empathy and understanding. And so it doesn't really matter the language in some ways, medieval or whatever, whoever's language it is.
Sometimes if you have good acting, that's all you need. Right?
Exactly.
And here's a question from Amy. Is Garrett going to continue the tradition of including one musical per season?
Again, I'm in the process of onboarding. I've had my job for 3 weeks. So as I get to know what our audiences are interested in, I get to know what my team up there, my mighty team who've been doing this work for much longer than me, what they find to be the most successful, what they're inspired by, what they want to produce. I will know more about whether or not it's the one musical or two musicals or plays with music or, I actually don't know yet. I won't know until I plan. My first full season to plan will be in 2021. The 2020 season has already been selected for me, which is actually quite a blessing.
Well, once you put your stamp on things, maybe you can change the name from Oregon to Oakland. What do you think? Let me get another caller on here. That's Michael. Michael, welcome.
Hey there. There's been some modern movies with Al Pacino. Mel Gibson did Hamlet. And Leonardo DiCaprio did Romeo and Juliet in modern times, like with cars and guns and stuff. But I got out of school in 1970, and we had to read a lot of Shakespeare, which helped me win a lot of Scrabble games, but it stimulates the brain. It's a lost art.
Well said. I think there's some head nodding here going on, and thank you for the call, Michael. Here's Jordan, who writes, when you talk about lack of diversity in theater audiences, are you talking about the color of people's skin or the diversity of thought? For instance, there may be a substantial diversity of color in Berkeley, but intellectual and political thought is very homogenous. That turned into kind of a swipe at Berkeley, but I think the question is maybe relevant. What do you think of when you think of diversity?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that we are at our best when we are a collective of different points of view. I think that, if anything, one of the great challenges facing many of us is sort of stepping into these wind tunnels. So the more points of view that we can find represented in the work and in the audience and on stage, the better. I do think it's a matter of how we manage that and how we get to the space where all those points of view are represented.
And how do you do that? I mean, especially when you're directing a theater, you're pretty much the auteur. You're in charge of everything.
Sure.
Right?
I think, I talk a lot about equity as being a verb, right? That equity, if you really want to get to a space where everyone feels welcome, sometimes you have to go a little bit harder in the opposite direction in order to create those spaces. And I think that the more work that we put into that, the more commitment that we put into that, the more trust that we build.
Tika, some thoughts from you?
Yeah, I actually agree. I think that you have to be in conversation with your audience, and part of that conversation includes letting them know where you need them to go, and that's through the work on the stage. So you do have to be more and more and more inclusive. You have to be more and more and more equitable, and you have to provide spaces for people, again, both on the stage and off the stage, to occupy those spaces where they were not invited to occupy before.
Here's Sean, who tweets, a play is to be seen, S-C-E-N-E, pun intended, and heard, not read. What are your thoughts about, because, you know, I've taught Shakespeare for many, many years off and on, and I believe in the text. I believe it for actors. I believe it for students. I think, and you came to the love of Shakespeare through the text, but there are people who say, it's meant to be performed.
I do. I agree that there are, I mean, it depends. So if you look at Long Day's Journey and Tonight by Eugene O'Neill, he never intended that play to be produced. He didn't want it to be seen. He wrote it to be read, and not by very many people. Of course, we are blessed in the opportunity to be able to experience seeing it. But I think that plays are both ways. I think that, you know, you sometimes you sit with a play and you go, this is amazing, and it's changed my world just by reading it. And sometimes you watch it and you go, oh,
well,
not,
I'm with
not
you.
So much.
All should read plays. And by the way, a little plug in for Dowhouse down in the East Bay, where you can actually see the manuscript of Long Day's Journey and Tonight, and you get a whole different experience with that play. Thank you both, and good luck the years ahead.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Again,
thanks for having
Nataki.
Us.
Nataki Garrett, again, is the incoming artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and Eric Ting is artistic director of California Shakespeare Theater. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and our is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Thanks for being a part of the program. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.